Hi, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. It is Tuesday, November 29th, and I'm Jessica Steinberg. I'm joined today by political writer Tal Schneider and U.S. correspondent Jacob Magid. Hello, good morning to you both.
Good morning, Jessica.
Hi, Jessica. Hi, Tal.
Hi there. So we'll discuss what's happening in the Knesset, the Biden administration's relationship with the new government, and more on former President Trump's dinner with Kanye West and Holocaust denier Nick Fuentes. Before we jump into everything, let's take a quick break.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question. They answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
Before Tal gets us started, I'm going to make a quick plug for our upcoming Times of Israel live event on December 6th, when we will screen award-winning Cinema Sabaya in English with Israel's Oscar nominee director Orit Fuchs Rotem at Yes Planet in Jerusalem. Look at the Times of Israel site for more information and tickets. And now, Tal, tell us what was happening in the Knesset yesterday as this new government is being put together and we see the headlines about who is being appointed what. What can you tell us?
Right, Jessica. So the Likud and the religious Zionists did not sign a coalition agreement yet. This morning, Tuesday, they issued a statement together saying that, you know, they managed to get through some of the issues and they will, you know, at least come together and replace the speaker of the Knesset. Netanyahu has to decide who the speaker is going to be. According to the statement, it's going to be an interim speaker of the Knesset, but we know that the interim speaker of the Knesset may remain in his role. So an interim speaker of the Knesset or speaker of the Knesset may start to move forward the new bills that this coalition wants to change even before the government is sworn in. This is very important. It seems technical, but really the idea is to change the bill that allow Derry, the chairman of Shas, to become a minister. Derry has a problem. He was convicted for his second time in life. The second offense was a tax evasion offense. He was convicted around 8 or 10 months ago. And, you know, he stood in front of the court and promised not to go back into the public life and not to be responsible to public, you know, funds. Now he is slated to become the interior minister and the health minister. And in order for Derry to overcome whatever his statements were at the time, I mean, upon his statement at the time, the judge signed a plea bargain and gave him a very light sentence, not sitting in jail and anything like that. Like they said, the fine was also light. So in order to overcome that, he wants to change the law. The law needs to be changed before the government will be sworn in. So that's one issue. I know it sounds unbelievable. This is the way they are tricking the rule of law in Israel, I suppose. I mean, I'm not laughing, but you know, it's sad, but this is how it goes now.
Is there anything that can happen in the Knesset itself by the opposition, let's say, that would prevent Derry from going through with this process in order to become a minister?
So you may ask about filibuster, I suppose.
I guess so.
But they have a 64 majority. It's quite easy to overcome a filibuster. They can just use one of the clauses of the Knesset bylaws and announce this process as urgent or so. And then the filibuster can go on, I guess, for maybe, you know, several hours during overnight But really, they can't really stop it. The opposition can yell, can ridicule, put all of the alarms. But I suppose the future coalition has, once they have the chairman in spot, they have all of the powers to kind of overcome the opposition's maneuvering. So,
Tal, I know that this incoming government wants to do a Supreme Court override law, but before they do that, is there a chance that the Supreme Court could say that Derry is not fit to be a minister because of his conviction?
Exactly. They can come, someone can take it up. I mean, I'm sure someone will take it to the High Court, claiming the bill specifically to make Derry a minister is both retroactive legislation and personal legislation. This is two components of Israel's law but at the same time, with the 64 majority, they can also pass the override clause that will, that will just override everything the Supreme Court says. There's another bill suggesting like that. So truly.
So you think Derry's going to be minister no matter what?
I say this is a done deal.
it is unbelievable times in Israel. I mean, there are this future coalition plans anyhow to change much of Israel's constitutional bills with respect to the separation of powers, with respect to the stand of the Supreme Court. I just wanted to mention one more thing from yesterday. This was the faction meeting of Avi Maoz, the chairman of Noam Party. We know Avi Maoz to be against LGBT communities, against women. This is not just, me describing him. This is his own words. Maoz is actually a one-person show because he is sitting in a faction that belongs to just one person himself. So there were no MKs in the faction meeting. There were only reporters. Maoz actually signed a coalition agreement as well with Netanyahu. His party signed an agreement with the Likud. He will be granted a deputy minister in the prime minister office. This sounds another kind of technical arrangement. He will be responsible to so many things. I'm just trying to explain to our listeners because yesterday for the first time I've met him. I've asked him a question. One of the things that he will get responsibility is the conversion issue on Russian immigrants.
On who is a Jew? Essentially, that's what it is.
On the organization, the governmental organization called Nativ. If you want to further understand the meaning of this, you should go into Times of Israel website and read what Nativ is and what Avi Maoz can and cannot do. Basically, any person who can come to Israel under the law will be scrutinized by Avi Maoz. And Avi Maoz doesn't want people who were not converted or converted in his own opinion as ultra-Orthodox or Orthodox. He doesn't want them here. He says that out loud. He said last night, I will act under the law. But again, as we all know, the law can be changed. And also, he wants to have this new governmental body that is called the Center for Jewish National and Identity under the Prime Minister office. In that center, he wants to scrutinize any kind of NGO that is invited to speak with Israel's IDF soldiers, Israel's policemen, or Israel's high schoolers. Any NGO that wants to, we're talking about thousands and thousands of NGOs and organizations that are giving services to IDF and the police and high schoolers in Israel. For example, he want to make sure that high school in Israel do not invite LGBT communities, NGOs or lecturers to talk to teenagers. This is a grave step, as we know. Many high schoolers need those services in order to overcome issues during high school. So, I don't know how many authorities really have under that role, but this is definitely giving him a national, stage to at least bring it to the national discourse.
We'll obviously keep on following this very closely. Thanks, Tal. We're going to take a quick break, and when we're back, Jacob will tell us how the Biden administration is approaching this new government.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him on, like, after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, like, blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. Jacob, fill us in about what you're hearing from the Biden administration, from officials, what they are thinking and planning with regard to their approach and relationship with the new government that's being formed in Israel.
Yeah, so you can understand a little bit from a call that took place at the beginning of the month when Biden reached out to Bibi and congratulated him on becoming the next prime minister. And there was a readout that the White House issued right afterwards, kind of used similar rhetoric than what we've been hearing before, talking about strengthening the relationship and how Biden is committed to Israel's security. And then U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Tom Nides, tweeted out, it was a very short tweet, it said, warm phone call, great talk, unbreakable ties. And it was kind of using this writing style that's very reminiscent to former President Donald Trump. And I think that just shows how they kind of wanted to be like that era where ties between at least the governments were quite close. And you could say the same thing about Biden and Netanyahu, that they have pretty good ties, very storied ties over several decades, but the same can't really be said about Bibi's coalition partners. And I spoke with one senior U.S. official who also harped on the fact that they have good ties, the two leaders, but he acknowledged that there's going to be a very challenging period ahead, hinting at some of his partners. But that period has actually already started. What we saw a couple weeks ago was the FBI decision to open up a investigation into the killing of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, which infuriated Israel. And what was interesting about this is that it wasn't really a White House decision. It was what I reported, that this was something that White House was caught off guard, U.S. Ambassador Tom Nides was caught off guard, that it was coming from the FBI, the Justice Department, which made this independent decision. And it kind of just shows how Biden's control over U.S.-Israel policy is somewhat limited. And that what actually ended up happening in this case was it wasn't him, but it was this decision by the FBI was as a result of pressure from Democratic lawmakers, who Biden has even acknowledged himself in a call with Netanyahu last year that this is not the same Democratic Party that we once maybe knew that kind of fell in line with the Israeli narrative. And it's not just progressives and the squad, the quote-unquote squad, that aren't following in line with the Israeli narrative, but also more moderates. And there were several of those more moderate Democrats like Robert Menendez and Brad Sherman who have publicly spoken out or reached out to Netanyahu to really warn ahead of the election, which is quite unusual to see some sort of interference in internal Israeli affairs. But they still felt it was so necessary to speak out against Itamar Ben-Gvir, who is now set to become the national security minister. And it wasn't just them, but also the State Department made a very rare statement calling it the celebration of Mayor Kahana that Ben-Gvir attended the ceremony a couple weeks ago abhorrent. So there's already this bubbling tension that's going to, I think, come to the fold. It's worth noting, though, that I think the issue on which Netanyahu has been really willing to butt heads publicly with a Democratic administration before, Iran, that you can say right now is not likely to be the main issue on which they're going to spar, I think, in the coming months, given the fact that the negotiations to revive the deal have gone nowhere. And I think it's just the Biden administration is not really thinking about that issue right now. But what the issue that they do like to talk about when they reach out to the Israeli and Palestinian leaders is the Palestinian issue, and specifically the issue of Jerusalem. And East Jerusalem, to be even more specific, be it on the Temple Mount and tensions there, or in Sheikh Jarrah, where there are these Palestinian families that are facing eviction. And when you have a minister now that's likely going to be in charge of the police, Itamar Ben-Gvir, who's kind of been seen as the face of of more right-wing policies in Sheikh Jarrah. He built a makeshift office there to support those evictions. And he's talked about just yesterday going to the Temple Mount in the coming weeks. So those things kind of led to the violence that, or not, I wouldn't say led, but they did, they came before the violence that we saw in May 2021 that blew up into a war. And the Biden administration since has really honed in on Jerusalem and trying to prevent that from happening again. So I think it'll be much harder to do so when you have a minister like that. And I think that will be an issue where they are going to be willing to put their foot down and really push for, even in public disputes with Israel, to ensure that there's quiet there, really fearing a bigger explosion. And I think in order to do that, though, what I was told from certain administration official is that they might be willing to swallow certain policies in the West Bank, that be it on settlement expansion. I don't think they're going to publicly praise it or even not condemn it. But I think as opposed to things like in Jerusalem or more extreme steps like annexation or legalization of outposts, those will be maybe where they put their foot down. But I think because they're going to have to pick their battles, and Biden really is not interested, according to officials I've spoken with, in any public disputes with Israel. He just wants to keep things calm.
I would presume that essentially given this band of brothers that Bibi has put together for his coalition, he essentially is going to be generally the face that is going to be talking to the Biden administration. In other words, we don't know yet.
Exactly.
You know, he's going to be the one. He has this relationship with Biden, but of course, he's got to deal with who he has behind him. So that creates also a different kind of dynamic, one would presume.
Right. I mean, that will be the big question, is how much Netanyahu is in control of his coalition partners as opposed to them being in control of him. I think the fact that he's in some of this legal trouble, there is a question of whether maybe they'll actually be the ones controlling him. But for sure, Netanyahu is going to want to try to be the face of foreign policy. In the past, he hasn't even appointed foreign ministers, so he can kind of be the one to be the diplomatic face of the country. But I think because for Netanyahu, that his legacy issue is the Abraham Accords and trying to strengthen that, he needs the Biden administration to do that. The U.S. is critical in any sort of diplomatic or regional cooperation effort. And I think he too will be willing to swallow or try to avoid public disputes. And he'll find a common partner in Biden who doesn't want to do that, who doesn't want to have those kind of issues either. But again, it'll depend on how much his coalition partners are able to control the narrative.
Right. Okay. And then mentioning someone who came up just before, former President Trump, who is being called out now for having dinner with Kanye, known as Ye West, and who is known for his anti-Semitic comments, and the known anti-Semite Nick Fuentes. But does Trump care that he's being called out? That's what I'm wondering.
It's a good question. It doesn't seem, based off of what we're hearing, that he cares. I think he was forced to issue the statement after Kanye. I think he didn't talk about this at the time. And then a couple days after the meeting, Kanye West tweeted out a video talking about how he had come to this meeting in order to ask Trump if he wanted to be his running mate, like his number two, in 2024. And then Trump yelled at him. And then he also mentioned that Trump thought Fuentes, who is this nice fellow who's attended the 2017 Charlottesville Unite the Right rally, he was at the January 6th storming of the Capitol, he said all sorts of things about the Holocaust and downgrading the number of Jews that were killed, talking about Israel, the whole nine yards. And this is a person that Kanye said that Trump thought was very, really impressive. And we saw quickly condemnations from Democrats and Jewish groups and also Republicans who have long criticized the president, as well as some in the Senate, but less so among more hardline Republicans in the House. But still, I think what's been noteworthy is seeing the Republican Jewish coalition, which issued a statement that's been very hesitant to criticize Trump in the past. They didn't mention Trump in the statement, but it did mention Kanye and Nick Fuentes and criticize anti-Semitism. But to go further, there was also David Friedman, who's a staunch the former envoy and staunch supporter of the president, Ilan Carr, this president's special envoy on anti-Semitism, the Zionist Organization of America that just gave a big award to Trump. So these are people that don't like to criticize the president, but did find it important to do so. And I think that has to do with the fact that they're starting to see that there might be another option for the party, and that being Ron DeSantis, if you followed the Republican Jewish Coalition's conference a week ago, it was clear that he was the real star at the conference. As much as people had no issue applauding and hyping up Trump, I think DeSantis was really the main pick. Ironically, though, that this is also Fuentes' preferred pick for 2024. He said that a couple weeks ago. So as much as Trump might not want to say it, I think this was a real blow to his campaign effort. There was one Trump aide who told the NBC News that the dinner was a effing nightmare. So I think those around him are quite getting nervous. On the other hand, and this is the last thing I'll say, is that there's still about, Ron Campius, JTA's correspondent, talked about that there's 30% of the party and of Republicans that are still rallying around the president or the former president. And when you have 30% in a primary where everyone is split between 10 different candidates because everyone in the Republican Party wants to be the next nominee, 30% is more than enough to secure the nomination. So is this enough, this dinner enough to really change things? I don't think so. But it'll depend on whether the rest of the party can maybe coalesce around another candidate, be it DeSantis or someone else.
Okay, we'll see how that plays out, that's for sure. Thank you, Jacob, for your comments. And you too, Tal. Thank you for being on today's Daily Briefing.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thanks, Tal. Thanks, Jessica.
Have a good day, everyone, and a good listen. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.